The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab 226 for Sunday, November 8th. Happy birthday, Dad. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Sunday edition of the show. I'm Dave Hamilton here in Durham, New Hampshire. Sitting next to me is Pilot Pete, and on the Skype, as always,
virtually sitting next to you, this is John F. Braun, and it's 2009, by the way. I think you left that part off.
Oh, did I really? Yeah, well.
Well, when, you know, hundreds of years in the future when people listen to this, that they may be curious as to what year that this was made.
Just yeah, well, actually, I mean, this is our fourth year in business, as it were, and so, you know, it's important to delineate the year.
All right. So what do we got?
We actually have an action-packed show for you here today. I took a look at the Magic Mouse. John, we have a new sponsor on board that we'll talk about later in the show. We have some great questions, great feedback about a lot of stuff from last week, including a lot more info on batteries in Apple notebooks. That's going to be a very interesting discussion and lots to learn. If you have an Apple notebook, there is info later here that's come in both from our listeners and also that we've found out by doing a little bit of investigative research. So you'll definitely want to stick around for that. And then just lots of tips and questions from you folks and from us.
The usual.
Yeah, the usual. And I got the window open here. It's like sort of a, you know, maybe the last warm weekend day that I'll have here. The last opportunity to air the studio out before the winter frost sets in. That's right. Are we ready to go on this, John? Should we dive right in? You got anything you want to say before we do? Parting words?
No, it's just unusual because, you know, it's bright out. And
yeah. We're all caffeinated.
I'm probably at peak efficiency right now because I've woken up and I've had my coffee.
Oh, that's great. All right. So Apple sent me a Magic Mouse to check out earlier this week. And it's interesting. So the first thing, of course, John, and you would have appreciated this. The box itself is like the iPod. It's that translucent case where, you know, you kind of take it apart and it sort of tells a story. But it's very sexy and you know, Apple like. But it very much like opening the box for you know, an iPod Touch. The interesting thing was on the back of the translucent case, there were five quick gesture hints to kind of teach you about the mouse. And that in and of itself was interesting to me. It's like, wow, OK, so Apple has designed something that's not intuitive in terms of how this multi-touch, right? Because the Magic Mouse has the entire surface of it is a multi-touch surface similar to the iPhone or iPod Touch, right? And so they have to retrain you. Now, you know, you can take this one of two ways. You can fault Apple and say, well, they've created something that's not intuitive. Or you can say, well, they've created something that's never been done before. And so they have to define the way intuition works with it.
Just to plant a seed, how, because another device, it occurs to me, that has this, of course, is the trackpad on your portable Mac.
Correct.
So you were using an iPhone or iPod Touch as a reference, and I think there are some differences depending on your mindset, how you approach the device.
Right.
So I don't know if it's closer to an iPod or closer to the trackpad on your, and I'll let you comment to that.
Yeah, that's actually a very good question, because to me it's way closer to the trackpad. Okay. You know, it not having a screen on it, like a display on it. There's not a whole lot of feedback you get from the device there's no feedback that you get from the device in terms of what your fingers will, you know, what will happen when your fingers touch or do a certain thing. So basically, you know, the way the multi-touch works on it is it allows you to scroll up and down, scroll side to side, which is very interesting. And some apps support it very well, like, you know, iPhoto, Safari for moving from page to page, FileMaker. The app itself will let you scroll from record to record by going side to side. And that I've actually found very, very handy. So it's a it, it, so, you know, that part of it I actually like, and not having to dive my finger onto a, you know, one spot only scroll wheel. It has actually been fine. So it interesting, though, when I plugged it in for the first time into my MacBook Pro, I followed the instructions. I have 10.6.1 on my MacBook Pro. Followed the instructions, went and clicked on set up a Bluetooth mouse, you know, turn the mouse on. It starts hunting. And the first three times that I tried this, it only saw the Bluetooth mouse by its MAC address. And so I had to kind of go back through and back through and back through. And finally, the fourth time I did it, it saw Apple wireless mouse and paired it immediately. It went, you know, immediately the fourth time.
All right. Just to be clear, you said before plugged it in that this, I just want to clarify.
I didn't plug in.
This does not have, this is wireless or Bluetooth exclusively. There is no USB cable.
Correct. You're right. Okay. And my apologies for that. Yeah.
No, virtually you plug it in.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to virtually plug it in. Yeah. So once that happened, then the mouse worked immediately. It worked with the system. The entire surface of the mouse itself is a clickable button. And you can click on the left side. And this happened immediately. If I clicked on the left side, I got my normal click. If I clicked on the right, you know, front corner or right side of it, I got a right click. And I knew, but then I went into the, you know, mouse system preference pane, and there was nothing special in there about the Magic Mouse. And I knew from my reading, and it also said in the instructions, the next thing you have to do is go, you know, update your software to get the Magic Mouse. So once the mouse was connected, then by going into software update, it would find the wireless mouse software update 1.0. And it installed that. And then it said, OK, you got to reboot. So I rebooted. As soon as I rebooted, a couple of things happened. One, the mouse icon in system preferences changed to the icon to a picture of the Magic Mouse, which, of course, you know, one would expect. And of course, inside there, the user, you know, the UI changed dramatically. Now I could configure the multi-touch and, you know, scrolling side to side and all of that stuff and what it would do. But something else changed. The right click was no longer different from the left click. Both clicking on either side now resulted only in a click. So by installing the Apple wireless mouse software update 1.0, I actually disabled the right mouse button. And this is by design. It has happened to everyone. You have to go into that mouse system preference pane and enable, you know, alternate click to happen on the right click. Which
they are just never going to let go of the single button mouse.
But here's the thing, John, if you take any dual button mouse off the shelf and plug it into your Mac, your Mac will see it as a two button mouse. And immediately the right, but without making any settings change, the right button works as that control click. And that was the case with this mouse, too, until I installed the software update. So it was like, wait a minute, what are you guys doing? Why are you fighting this so much? And Pete, you had your hand in the air.
I do have a question. So is there a tactile click on it when you click, or is it strictly a tap?
It's definitely a tactile click. Yeah, okay. And so that part's not bad.
That's good.
Yeah, it is good. The clicking on it doesn't bother me at all. Yeah.
My conjecture would be that the old settings were good until you installed that update, though, and then it went to a default.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, but it wasn't. There was no setting. I've checked this on other Macs that I have. There was no
in your system preferences.
There's nothing in your system prep. Look, I mean, even on Leopard on this machine, I've got the.
I know. I'm thinking of the, two fingers to right click.
Right.
My MacBook Pro.
Right.
Let me ask you this, Dave. There is
no right click option in the current system preferences on a machine that has not had a Magic Mouse installed. Okay. And yet, you know, I've got this Razer mouse here, the Razer Pro V1.6 on the mouse on the Mac in the studio. And it's got a scroll wheel that works. It's got a right click that works. And I never changed a setting to make that happen. So
it just knows.
Yeah, and it knew with the Magic Mouse until I installed the software for the Magic Mouse, which disabled it. And then I could go turn it back on. It was no big deal, but it was, you know, it was weird. So go ahead, John. Yeah.
Okay, I got a couple of questions. Yeah. So one, could you have installed this software update before you connected the mouse? Or was it once the mouse was there, software update said, I got to get something new? Or did you not?
I think both are true. However, no software came in the box with the mouse.
Okay.
And the Mac did not see, just like I'm sure your Mac has not told you that there is wireless mouse software update 1.0 available. My Mac did not tell me, it did not see this in software update until I had paired with the Magic Mouse. Now, I think it's available as a standalone download, and presumably if, okay. you know, if you did that, then I'm looking to see. Yes, there's
okay.
wireless
okay.
mouse. So yeah, you can go and download this. It is available on their website.
And kind of to Pete's question, and this is where I believe, though I have not yet operated one of these. So yep. I've heard people have, you know, mixed feelings about it, but there is no tactile hint, or is there, that you are on the left or right button side of the mouse? Do you see what I'm asking?
I do. I don't know. I haven't taken it apart, so I don't know this for sure, but my conjecture is the left and right click are being decided by a combination of the multi-touch interface and where you're touching, as well as the click. I don't know if there's actually two click sensors inside it. It certainly doesn't feel that way, because when I click on both sides, I don't feel a double, I don't feel a double trigger, if you will.
Yeah, I guess what I'm hinting at is I don't know if I personally would be comfortable with a device where there's nothing that will tell my fingers, oh, you're on this side or that side of the boundary between the right and the left.
It's
totally smooth, right? The top is...
That, okay. For me, that part of it has not been an issue at all. It's that part's been very intuitive. In fact, it was intuitive from the moment I started using it. It was like, okay, well, if I click over here, it's on the right side. If I click over here, it's on the left side, and it was fine. Mm-hmm. The one issue I do have with it is its height. This is a very, very slim mouse, and I'm showing it to Pete as compared to this Razer. It's
half inch.
Yeah,
maybe half inch high at its crown.
At its crown, right. Yeah. That's right. It's a slope device. And excuse me, it's early in the day, folks. My issue with it is, with all the other mice I use, I can place the palm of my hand on the mouse and rest it there while still moving around, and my wrist is sufficiently off the desk, etc. If I place the palm of my hand on this thing, I can't. My fingers don't get to the front. There's not enough surface there. And it's not tall enough to use. So that part of it has been very, very interesting. It's almost like I was joking with the we were joking in the TMO Towers at our one of our staff meetings this week that, is it possible that Steve Jobs has just very, very small hands? Because every mouse that Apple's ever come out with has been, almost engineered for much smaller hands than I have.
Like the hockey puck, I think.
Yeah.
The first iMac mouse to me. And that had that was another one that had this not so much tactile problem. It was okay tactile, but it was round. So my gripe with that was, again, you lose a way for your hand to determine orientation. The oval one, I think, was much better. But the round one, to me, that was just... Yeah. A terrible idea from
obviously that's not a problem with the Magic Mouse. I mean, it's very much shaped. So
you can tell the orientation with no problem.
Yes. No, that's not an issue. Although, I think you could turn it around.
Oh, yeah, if you inverted it.
If you invert it, then you'll know pretty quick, though, when you try to click and nothing happens. So the click is definitely only on the front of it. And there is an Apple logo on the back of it. So, you'll orient it the right way. And it is optical. There is no wheel. So lastly, my last gripe with it, which is a pretty big one, is that it's slow. Now, it in and of itself is not slow, but the maximum tracking speed available in the in Mac OS X by default is way too slow for me with this mouse. I had to go and there's two things you can do. And the easiest one is to download something called Mouse Zoom. And we'll put the link in the show notes here. But there's also a thing you can go to the command line and do, edit a com.apple.mouse.scaling item and change all that. But Mouse Zoom was much quicker and much easier for me. And has worked, so I was able to get it to where I wanted.
Okay, so
it to
even
be.
If you put it in the built, so the built-in, I assume they still have tracking speed and scrolling speed.
Yeah.
But even when you put it on fastest, it wasn't fast enough for you.
Not for tracking speed. For scrolling speed, it's fine. But yeah, tracking speed, no, not enough. And you know, it's been a long time since I've used an Apple mouse for any extended period. And the comments that I got back were, yeah, this is typical. Apple's mice are always, you know, tracking slow by default, but go ahead and use mouse zoom and you're good to go. So,
okay. And then it has batteries, which I guess somewhere you'll get a notification if, or you can tell what the battery level is, right?
You can by going into the system preference pane. It's two AA batteries. Yep.
Oh, and they are replaceable.
Correct.
That's very un-Apple.
Yes. So any other questions before we get into our battery discussion, which is, because that's a nice segue into it.
Yeah. Smooth.
Nope.
Thanks. All right. I will do one other thing is that I want to talk about our first sponsor for the show, which is a sponsor that's been with us for a very long time, and that's Barebone Software. And today I want to talk about Yojimbo. Yojimbo 2.0 is an information organizer for your Mac. It's one place where you can dump everything. And I have been using this since about 2 hours after it came out, and I think that was 3 years ago. I use it for everything. If I have any little snippets of text or serial numbers that I need to store or PDFs that I need to store, or for example, our show, you're able to categorize things inside Yojimbo, John. And so I have created a tag folder called Mac Geek Gab. And then inside that, I store the text file that is our agenda for every show. I also have a workflow, an Apple script that I created, which allows me from email, from mail.app, I choose file print, and then I go to the PDF menu, and I have saved to Yojimbo as MGG, right? And so I choose that for any email that I want to read in the show. And it creates a PDF of that email, asks me for what I want the name of that to be. I type that name in, and then it puts it in Yojimbo, files it as in the MGG category, and also saves that name to the clipboard so that I can then go paste it into our agenda file wherever it is I want. Then when it's time to do the show, of course, Yojimbo syncs from Mac to Mac with MobileMe. And so I come up to the studio and bam, everything is up here. I'm good to go. I'm able to put audio files right inside the text here, play them. I use this for everything. Little tech tidbits, I've actually got a thing in here for recipes. I've got, categories for each of the businesses, and I'm able to just store all that cluttered information in one place that's synced across three of my Macs. This is available at barebones.com. You can download it for free as a 30-day trial. And then when you decide to go and buy, it is $39 for an individual version. Family pack is $69. And if you're a student or otherwise involved in the educational world, it's $29. So all this is available, barebones.com for Yojimbo, which is now at version 2.0. And John, it's time to talk about batteries. And I think the first thing we should do is correct ourselves.
Well, I'll say that I made a bold statement, and I think you'll agree it was a bold statement in that I was I'll take the blame here. I'll take the hit for you, Dave.
I think we both got it wrong, but that's okay.
Well, I made the statement, I think at the beginning, from what I recall, that a cycle is a full charge to discharge, or discharge to, is in that you measure it at the extremes. So
yes.
If you hit the extreme of being fully charged, or you hit the extreme of being fully discharged, that defines a cycle. And although it was a bold statement, it was not entirely correct, or you could say wrong, but yeah. I'd like not entirely correct.
No, I think we both agreed on that last week, and we were both wrong in so much as how Apple counts this. And we got lots of emails from many of you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. But I was going by the classic definition of a cycle,
right?
You know, in engineering and other speak, which includes a full, you know, hitting both boundaries is how you define a cycle or a hertz.
Right.
You know, people used to say kilocycles. Now they say kilohertz. But anyways, and so go on, Dave. We got a lot of additional information.
We did. And then I went and did some research on my own. But I want to talk about what's been said by our hidden genius here. We'll call this person. And The note says a full charge cycle is the equivalent to a complete discharge of the battery and a complete recharge of the battery, or using 100% of the battery's capacity, but not necessarily in a single charge session. If you charge up a battery to full, then use half the charge it up to full again, then use half the charge and charge it up to full a second time. That is the equivalent of one charge cycle. The reason the Apple Store employees suggest that people let their computers discharge as much as possible, then recharge it to full, is because the battery always discharges a little bit over time. But when the adapter is plugged in, the system rushes to recharge it to maintain 100%. This pounds through the charge cycles, using another definition, very quickly. And the more charge cycles the battery has, the less capacity the battery will hold. Okay, so there's two things in that little tidbit we just read. The first half defines how Apple defines charge cycles, which is to say, once you have charged a battery 100%, it's a charge cycle, but that's cumulative. So if you go down 10% and charge up 10%, then go down 20% and charge up, now you're at 30%. Okay, and it adds that up. And once you hit or pass 100, it ticks the charge cycle counter over one. So it's not necessarily, you could never bring the battery all the way down to zero and all the way back up and yet still count charge cycles. And that's an important thing to remember. Did I get that right, John?
I think you got it. And I think what it's hinging on, though, is I guess the battery would measure this based on the current capacity number.
Yes. Yes.
Which changes over time, as we know. Like, I'm looking at mine right now. My MacBook Pro battery started off with 5,500 milliamp hours, and now it's down to current capacity. It says it's 4,359. So this battery has been, you know, through a bunch of cycles.
Right.
So I think what's happened, so once it sees that amount of capacity being restored, it'll say that's a cycle.
That's right. Yes. 100% of current capacity. Now, the other thing that was in this note here is that it is another definition of cycle, and that is every time the battery is charged to 100%, regardless of whether it started from 0, 50, or 99. And the inference here, which I emailed back with this person and confirmed, is that when the battery hits 100, each time that starts to erode away at its capacity. Now, you might not see it every single time it hits 100, but that's the thing that beats the heck out of a battery. So someone like me, who keeps their MacBook Pro on the bench charged up most of the time, is constantly hitting that 100 mark, right? I mean, it's always going to go down to, you know, 99, 98, and then bam, right back up to 100. That's the worst thing you can do for a battery. Yes, they've gotten better. It's not nickel cadmium like the old days, but this still does erode a battery. And I can confirm that by what's happened to the two batteries that I had. And I say had because there's more to this story. I had one battery with 50 charge cycles, and it was down to 2,000 milliamp hours. As John indicated, batteries on the removable batteries on MacBook Pros start out at about 5,500. And I had another one with 69 charge cycles and 3,200 milliamp hours. So both of these had not seen a whole lot of recharging and yet had been totally beat up. So Apple recommends that you charge your battery, you completely discharge it and bring it back up at least once per month. I think you need to do it more frequently than that. So I've set my calendar to do it to remind me to do it every 3 weeks, and I will report back as time goes on and see how it goes. And I want to talk about my Apple Care information here too, because this is a juicy tidbit. But figured I'd stop here, John, and get your thoughts.
No thoughts. I'm.
All right. Okay. I just didn't want to keep railroading here. You know, I'm all caffeinated and ready to roll. So.
No, I think you covered. Yeah, I think okay. We covered the nuances of, you know, what isn't. Now I did notice, and they do have an article, which we'll point to, of course, in the notes, but they do indicate that towards the end of the battery's life, you know, they have this trickle charge versus a full, you know, full blast of juice.
Right. Right, right. Yes, that's right. And my presumption is that Apple has engineered it such that the trickle charge has the least harmful impact on the battery's capacity as possible. I mean, that would only stand to reason, right?
That's my thought. So, yeah and so they do a nice job, actually, of explaining most of this on apple.com/batteries.
That's right, yeah. And we will put that link in the show notes, but excuse me, that is the link. I'm going to get a little tea here, John, before I launch into my AppleCare story. And now I will launch into my Apple. That's right. Yeah. So I got two kids homesick with the flu, presumably the swine flu, since that's of course the only flu that's around right now. So I'm hoping not to get it before I go on vacation next week. So after our show yesterday, after our show last week, you know, I got up Tuesday morning and thought, you know, I need to call Apple about this battery thing. I've been kind of letting it go. You know, we talked about how Snow Leopard reminds you, yeah, your battery's not doing so well. You got to go to service battery. So I did. And I got a nice woman on the phone and started going through everything. And she said, okay, you know, what's your, I actually did the online service request thing. So I had copied and pasted in the cycle count and, you know, maximum capacity, of my battery right in there. So she had all this information right up front and she said, okay, it seems like, you know, what you're doing here, but have you reset the SMC on the machine? I said, well, you know, to be honest, it's probably been a while. She said, all right, well, let's go ahead and do that. And so that involved, shutting the machine down, pulling the battery out, leaving it out for a little while, then holding the power button down for 10 seconds with the machine off and unplugged, then plugging the battery back in, and starting it back up. And it made a minor difference to my battery's full charge capacity, but nothing substantial. So she said, okay, here's how AppleCare works. And this is the important part. If your battery's cycle count, as told by the power option or the power line item in the system profiler, if that cycle count is less than 300 and your battery is, your full charge capacity of your battery is less than 80% of an Apple defined maximum that we don't publish, then AppleCare will replace your battery for free if you're under AppleCare or if you've bought a second battery that's you know, still under its 1-year warranty. So she said your battery, we don't tell you what the number is, but your battery is definitely below 80%. No question there. So we'll, you know, what we do is we'll put a hold on your credit card. We'll ship you a new battery. You swap it out, you ship it back, and then, you know, we release the hold on your credit card. So, John, you and I both know that new batteries come with a capacity of 5,500. Now, you know, maybe we don't know what Apple's 80%, you know, 100% number is. It's possible the 100% number is 5,500. It's possible maybe they shave a little bit off that and say, let's call the 100% number 5,000. I don't know. We'll have to get some more anecdotal evidence from all you listeners out there to kind of keep us apprised. But that's how it works. And so they ship me a new battery. Now I have a second battery that I have in the house here that I occasionally use with my machine. And I asked them, I said, well, while we're on the phone here, I do have another battery. Does AppleCare cover only the battery that came with the machine, or does it also cover other batteries? And they said, no, you know, AppleCare covers anything that you use with your Mac. And I said, okay, well, Here's the data on the other battery, you know, 50 cycle counts or whatever it was. It was less than 300 and, you know, like 2000 milliamp hour charge capacity. And she said, well, yeah, that covers too. I said, well, I don't want to double dip here, but while we're at it, if you want to send me two batteries, she says, yeah, absolutely. So we went through that. She said, I have to put a double hold on your credit card. And that's what stands to reason. And so, you know, the next morning, Wednesday morning, two new batteries arrived and, you know, sent the old ones back. So double dipping is allowed.
But it seems to me that encourages abusing your battery.
It definitely encourages abusing my battery.
You'd think they'd set it up the other way, but that's...
I agree.
Less than 300 cycle counts. Abuse it, beat it up. and yep. they'll give you a new one.
And they'll give you a new one. That's right. So, but here's the thing. You know, for me, it seems like the best thing for someone like me that's leaving the computer on the bench all the time is to take the battery out so that it's not constantly bouncing between this, you know, 97 and 100 range, and put it in, you know, twice a month, charge it, you know, deplete the charge, bring it all the way back up, then take it out again so that it's not, you know, just constantly being rattled around. I'm curious to see if that's the real answer here. But it sounds like you use your battery, John, far more correctly than I do, because your batteries have held up very well.
Yeah, I don't have it plugged in nearly as often as you do, I think.
Right.
A lot of times I'll be running on battery and you know, simulating what could be considered a normal cycle.
Mm-hmm.
The one tool I'll plug here, we've mentioned it before, I'll mention it again. Battery Health Monitor shows you all of this stuff in one handy little screen. It shows original capacity, current capacity, current charge, and charge cycles, as well as the battery voltage. And it also has a bunch of flags, which I assume are set by the little chip in the battery. So it'll say low battery warning, depleted, not chargeable. I think that happens when the battery is exceeded its number of cycles. It just says, I'm sorry.
Okay. That's very cool. Oh,
and Pete uses, what do you use, Pete? Coconut battery?
Coconut battery. Yeah, a little free.
And that has those same numbers there?
Gives you those same numbers, right? Tells you how many times you cycled and how many milliamp hours are left. That's that sort of thing.
That's great.
Excellent. Or it's buried in System Profiler, but I don't think it gives you quite as much information as these do.
System Profiler does not explicitly tell you what the original maximum capacity of your battery was. But again, that, you know, Snow Leopard knows and will tell you, you know, if you're getting that service battery warning in your Snow Leopard battery menu, it's because you're below that 80% number. So that's the magic there.
Okay.
All right. John, it is time to talk about our second sponsor, which is a new sponsor to this show.
Excellent.
A company called Miccus, M-I-C-C-U-S at Miccus.com. And the product that we're talking about today, John, is something they actually sent samples to both you and I so that we could talk a little more intelligently about it. And it's called the Blue Bridge, B-L-U-B-R-I-D-G-E. This is a pretty cool device. I wanted to pick up. Oh, I thought I had the data sheet for it on the floor, and I have it right in my hand here. What it is, it's a Bluetooth speakerphone for your cell phone. It's mostly designed to be used in your car, but there's no reason you couldn't also use it in your house or your office or wherever you want. You pair it with your cell phone. It works with the iPhone, but as John found out this morning, it also works with your, what do you have there, John?
I still have, until the Verizon iPhone comes out, I still have a Motorola Crazer.
Got it.
Which, and I think the key here is that the phone that you deal with has to have voice recognition of, and make it available via Bluetooth, which the Crazer does.
Okay. And so the idea is you pair this device with your phone. Your phone sees it like another headset, a Bluetooth headset. And then when you talk, it's a little speakerphone. And it's got volume commands on it, and then also just a kind of the big button that either answers or hangs up the phone. And then on the side, it's got a mute button. But it's got a couple of cool little features. One, the biggest to me, is that on the back of the device, so on the front is a speaker and a, you know, microphone and all those buttons we just talked about. On the back of the device is a solar panel. And the idea is it also comes with a suction mount. So you take this suction mount and you put it on the windshield of your car, maybe up in the, you know, kind of upper left hand corner. And so now you've got the microphone and speaker facing you, the solar panel facing essentially the sky. And you can charge this battery from a USB cable. But of course, if you're leaving it in your car, you can also charge it with the sun. And so now you've got this thing that basically you can just leave living in your car. And it's a handy little speakerphone. Your iPhone will automatically sync with it. I think it's got 800 hours of standby time, if I'm not mistaken, John.
800?
I think it is. Yeah, I'm looking on the deal here. Yeah, 800 hours of standby, 13 hours of talk time. So you could just leave it on in your car, you know, assuming you use your car more than once a week or so, and you're good to go.
You go to Florida for the winter and come back.
Yes. That's right. And it's got text to speech. When you receive a call, depending on your cell phone, it will either announce the name of the caller or their phone number. And so that's the Blue Bridge Bluetooth speakerphone for your automobile from Miccus, MICCUS.com. And of course, we'll have a link in the show notes, as we always do, for the sponsors of our show. All right, John, it's time to move on to Joel, even though we're burning daylight here. We've got a lot of daylight left. Last show, we talked about a way of opening files and setting different files to open specifically with certain programs. And what we said, John, was to go into the highlight the file, go to file menu, choose get info, and edit the information there, which is completely valid and not incorrect at all. However, Joel and many others wrote in, and Joel said, love the show and have for years. Best opening music of any podcast in the universe. But guys, come on, right? Control click on a file, then hold down option key. Okay, he says, right or control click on a file, then hold down the option key, and the contextual menu changes from open with to always open with. And that way you can go and just choose the application right there and you're done. You don't have to go into the get info. So right click on the file or control click, hold down the option key, and you'll see right there magically in that menu, open with changes to always open with, and you're good to go. So you can set it from there.
Shame on us.
Shame on. Well, hey, you know, and he says this has been here since the OS X beta. I love this stuff. I mean, it the depth of what's available in the UI here in OS X amazes me. So it's great to stumble onto new stuff.
It changes some other contextual menu items too there.
Oh,
pretty
yes.
Cool stuff.
Yeah, I saw this. So get info changes to show inspector, and quick look changes to slideshow. And I guess a general tip is that pretty much all around OS X is, if you either bring a menu, whether it be from the menu bar or a contextual menu, hold down option just for kicks and something may change.
Interesting.
I mean, I'm just doing this in text edit right now, and I'm in text edit, and you know, I'm pulling some menus down and things are changing live.
Yeah.
On some menus, not all. So I think this is an Apple convention to get extra geeky stuff out of your menus.
We like that. We like extra geeky stuff. All right. Now on to another quick tip from Jeff.
Hey, John and Dave. It's Jeff from Denver, Colorado. I was calling in about John's bag issue with all of them being black. I recently got a Timbuktu bag. They're made by a company in California. The inside of them is white. Or you can even do a custom bag. You'll pay a bit more, and then you can make them whatever color you want inside and outside. They have a really nice padded laptop compartment. I got one about a year ago and just love it. So they're Timbuktu bags.
All right, thanks. That's Tim, T-I-M-B-U-K, and then number 2. Of course, a link will be in the show notes forthcoming. Moving on to Steve, John. As we're just knocking these little ones
yeah,
out here.
We could do Steve.
All right, good. Steve says, I know you guys talked about this on a recent show, but I can't find it. Can you please tell me about the app you mentioned that helps you copy your music from your iPod back onto your computer so it can be put back into iTunes? And the answer, John, is
iTunes backwards.
iTunes.
Snooty.
That's right. Yeah.
Which is iTunes backwards. That's an easy way to remember the name of the tool. Otherwise, I don't know how you'd remember that. So, yeah, I guess it exposes the partition or whatever wacky stuff Apple does to kind of shield you from that information.
That's good. Yeah. And I think there's others. In fact, I know there's others out there, but Snooty seems to be the market leader, or at least the mind space leader. Yeah.
Yeah. They've kept up. So,
yeah. All right, we talked about keyboard stuff last week. John, do you want to give any precedent to this, or should we just let Dr. Bob have his way with the audio and then we'll follow up?
You set him up, I'll knock him down. But
okay.
No, I was surprised because I'm like, Bob? And then I was like, oh, yeah. That's Bob.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. So our own Dr. Bob Levitis.
Hey, Dave and John. It's Bob in Austin, Texas. I was listening to Mac Geek Gab 224, and you had a question from Gilbert about his keyboard, which was selecting text randomly, deleting it, and jumping around on the page. You had some good suggestions, but I have another one. I had the same thing happening to me, and I couldn't figure out for the life of me what was going on, and it was that my palm was rubbing on the trackpad, and I was moving the cursor around and sometimes clicking. So there is an option in the trackpad system preference pane that says ignore accidental trackpad input. If you select that checkbox, then when your palm or your finger hits the trackpad while you're typing, it will not move the cursor around, and I believe that will fix Gilbert right up. Great podcast. This is where you cut me off.
Thanks, Bob. All right, and John, you've got a follow-up on this
one. And after I heard this, I looked around at my machine, and I'm like, is Dr. Bob insane? Is he in another universe? Where is this setting that he speaks of?
Well, he does live in Austin.
which, compared to the rest of Texas, is kind of another world.
It's its own universe in and of itself. And for me, that's actually a good thing. I love the six years.
So I looked, and at least on my MacBook Pro, there is no ignore accidental trackpad input option in the trackpad. It's not there. Now, sometimes Apple moves things around, but I found out why it's not there. And Apple has a knowledge base article called About the Ignoring Accidental Trackpad Input Option on Computers with Multi-Touch Trackpad. And the answer
is... Hey, John, I'm going to pause you here because Skype is not being kind to you. So I'm going to recall you with Skype. All right. I think we've resynced, John. You're there, correct?
Yes.
Oh, you sound so much better. All right, go ahead.
All right. So I think I'm going to talk about what I found. So Bob came up with this, and I was looking all over my computer for this setting that he mentioned. It was not there. At first, I thought Bob was insane, but then I figured out the reason for the discrepancy here. So I did a little searching, and Apple has a excellent knowledge base article called About the Ignoring Accidental Trackpad Input Option on Computers with the Multi-Touch Trackpad. And the answer, in short, is that machines after a certain date, and it lists the products, but it pretty much spans products starting in late 2008 up to the current machines, this option is not there because it is built in or, I guess, on by default. But what they actually say is the option no longer appears because it already does this.
Got it.
So I guess after a certain point in time, they updated, I would think, the firmware or something in the hardware of the trackpad that kind of eliminates the need for you to set this from software. Because, you know, I can't think of any reason why you wouldn't want this option on.
Well, yeah.
Why would you say, you know, permit accidental trackpad input? I can't imagine why you would want that.
That should be an option.
Yeah.
So that's the answer. So Bob, I guess, is on a pre-late 2008 machine, which is why he got that option. Or some people will get it and some don't.
Got it. You know, I have to interject here with a little tangent. We were talking earlier this week, and I think actually John Martellaro wrote an article about it. You mentioned that the option should be called, you know, allow or permit accidental trackpad input. And Apple's always got kind of funny things in their settings. And the Mr. Martellaro wrote an article this week about what to set if you want to disable Rosetta, right? And there's a whole big thing in there. But the interesting thing is, if you want to enable Rosetta from the command line, you set this thing and you say essentially that the thing that's going to handle PowerPC is /usr/libexec/oah/translate. And then that, of course, translates PowerPC code to Intel code. And that's what Rosetta does. If you want to disable Rosetta, though, you set that option to Rosetta non grata, which is just brilliant. I think that's great. It's funny. You know, this is a whole big thing. And it's like /usr/libexec/oah/Rosetta non grata. Here, I'll paste this into the Skype chat that we have in our back channel here, John, so that you can see. Oh, I'm in the wrong spot. There you go. So it is Rosetta non grata. And we'll put the link to John's article in the show notes, too, so that you've got it. But yeah, Apple's always burying funny stuff. And it would be, I don't think they have in this case, but you mentioned, you know, so. A caffeinated detour. Mm-hmm. Are we ready to go? Keith? Is it time for Keith? You're right, John?
It's time for Keith.
Okay.
Hi, Dave and John. This is Keith in England. Just a quick question about the podcast itself. You often mention that you can click on links in the Enhance podcast, and I hear this in other podcasts as well. I subscribe to the enhanced AAC version of the Mac Geek Gab, and I can see and select chapters in the top bar, but I've never been able to find any clickable links in Enhanced Podcasts. Where are they? How do I do this? Thanks. Bye.
All right, John, it's all yours.
How do you do this? And, you know, that is an excellent question, because if it's not enabled, I would challenge anybody to find something intuitive in the iTunes interface to bring this up. And what you have to do is that if you look in the lower left-hand corner of the main iTunes window, there's a group of icons, which look like they probably do something interesting. There's a plus, there's a shuffle, and then there's one. It's a square with an up-pointing rectangle in it. Now, for most Apple programs, if you hover over something for a moment with the cursor, it'll tell you what it is, and this one's no different. And so the rightmost button with the shape I just mentioned is called Show or Hide Item Artwork in Video Viewer. And to me, it's totally obvious that by enabling that, you then see the links to the... No, I'm kidding, of course. Is what? So they just kind of stuffed that somewhere. And so that's the reason you're not seeing, is because the button to bring that up is just, to me, not intuitive at all.
Yep. And it does chew up space in your playlist list. So you may, I think by default it is on, but I honestly can't remember because it's been so long. But you may have disabled this, you know, years ago, Keith, because you wanted that space and didn't care to see the album artwork for every album that was playing. It's just not that important, you know. So that's where that stuff is. Yep. All right. You know, time is ticking here, John. So this is going to be Geek's Choice for you. You pick any one of the stuff that's left in our longer here list, and that's what we'll do.
Oh, wow. You put me on the spot.
I'm putting you totally on the spot here.
You know, let's go in order. Albert.
All right. We'll do Albert. And then we're skipping around, though.
Hi, John and Dave. Albert from Cape Town, South Africa. I've got some issues with my Spotlight, and after doing various searches and rebuilding caches and re-indexing Spotlight using Onyx, it still won't go away. What is happening is when I'm trying to launch apps, it doesn't seem to find them, but it's not consistent. Sometimes it does see them, especially after I've launched it myself directly from the applications folder. Immediately after, it's available in Spotlight again. Just seems like I can't trust my Spotlight results anymore. Hope you've got some ideas. Cheers.
So this is a tough one because he mentions all the things that I know to fix this. Short of going and manually deleting the Spotlight files themselves, and though that I think that's what editing it in Onyx does, right? There's two ways to wipe out Spotlight files. One is to use the mdutil command from the terminal. We'll send a link, but I think it's mdutil space dash capital E, which is erase and then space and then slash. And I'm doing that entirely from memory, and I would not type that command into my own machine solely from memory. But I think that's it. It's dash E that I got it right. So that will go and erase those files using Apple's command and force it to rebuild them. That's the only place I could start. But again, I think he's already done that with Onyx. Do you have any other ideas there, John?
Yeah, is that Spotlight, when it comes to trying to find an application, is a mess.
Well,
Were you looking?
John?
What I'll say is the behavior is, to me, inconsistent. Again, in the context of trying to use it to launch an application, as you start typing an application, depending on how Spotlight feels, it'll sometimes give a big list. Like, for example, I use Microsoft as an example because I have, you know, Microsoft Word, Microsoft this, Microsoft that.
Right.
And at first, you'll see a nice long list. Then it'll get a little shorter. Then it may jump up. Then it may jump down. Then it may move to the left, to the right, do the hokey pokey. The behavior is very inconsistent, and it bugs me a lot of times. So for an app launcher, I'm not crazy about it. What you can do, I think, this will always show you all the results, is, you know, so once you've done the Spotlight search and it starts finding some things, or maybe when it finishes, you'll then see something show all, and that'll give you all of the results, not being parsed by that menu. The way that menu sometimes changes to me is annoying.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it what it's doing is it's trying to keep the length of the entire menu consistent. And as it's adding new types of data, it then shortens up the number of any given type that it shows. So it might show 10 items at first, but then as it, you know, when it's only showing apps and files, but then as it, you know, shows PDFs, well, now it might, you know, only be five, right. You know, and in the end, it might only be three. And the weird thing is that the top hit, which is the thing over which the cursor hovers, is actually decided using a number of factors. And one of them is what you chose the last time you typed something similar to this in the search. So it prioritizes based on you. But that's still, and that may explain why Albert's not seeing the application that he's looking for. If the list is only three applications long and he's got 10 applications that match whatever it is he's typed, well, then maybe that's the issue. Of course, if it's not showing any applications, that's a whole different deal. Based on the fact that sometimes apps show up, I don't think what I'm about to suggest will help, but it's certainly worth going into System Preferences and choosing Spotlight and Search Results and making sure that applications is checked, and also go through here and disable the things that you never are going to use the Spotlight menu to search for. Like for me, I turn off mail messages. I don't want to see those up there. Although in Leopard and Snow Leopard, mail messages also means you won't see iChat chat logs. But, you know, I turn those off. I turn off events and to-do items. I basically use the Spotlight menu to search for applications and documents and the rest, you know, so to turn off contacts and things like that. And that can help free up that menu and perhaps display more options.
You read my mind, because that's where I was going to suggest to go. But I'm going to add just one. I'm going to put a cherry on top of this here is you'll notice in smaller text. Right at the top of that, it says drag categories to change the order in which the results appear. Now, I think on both of our machines, or at least on mine, number one is applications.
You know, I never noticed that before, John.
I think I just noticed it right at this very moment. So, and it resonated because you said applications. So I think by default, applications is number one. So make sure if you'd like to use Spotlight for application launching, maybe your application for whatever reason is buried in there and you're not always seeing it because it gets pushed out by other things. So.
Right. Oh, very interesting. All right. And okay. So one last thing, and this is yet another way to reset the Spotlight indexing on a volume. If you go to the other tab that's out there, called Privacy, add your hard drive to this tab, quit out of System Preferences, come back into System Preferences, go to the Spotlight Privacy, and then remove your hard drive from here. That will also force a Spotlight rebuild, at least in theory. So, all right. I want to go to Sean here, John, because I think this is a good geek challenge. And since we're going to be off for 2 weeks because fingers crossed I'm still going to be going on a cruise next weekend or leaving next week. This will be a good one to leave out there and see if we find an answer when we're back. So I'm going to go to Sean and I say this and, you know, then it takes me time to pull up the email. And so I've got to vamp a little. How you doing there, John?
Great.
Good. Okay. So Sean writes, do you guys know if I can get my time capsule to work like an iDisk in terms of synchronization and offline files? In other words, when I drop a file onto my iDisk volume, that file exists in the cloud and on my MacBook Pro, so that when I'm offline, I can still have access to the file. Anyway, want to get the same behavior using my time capsule. Okay, and I did some clarification here. For this question, ignore the fact that the time capsule has other functionality, like backup functionality and time machine and all that. Take that out of the equation. What he's looking to do is store files on a disk attached locally, either connected directly to his Mac or on the local network, and then without having to manually do any copying or syncing, wants to have that data replicated on his Mac, similar to the way that Dropbox works or that iDisk works. And, you know, as soon as I read his question, John, I thought, oh, yeah, there's an answer here. You use wait a minute. All this functionality exists, right? You know, we've got Dropbox, we've got iDisk, we've got a couple other things, but they're all built to use this tech to sync to the cloud. There's nothing to do a local automatic sync. And, you know, there's even something called Picnic that I stumbled on. It's actually a cool app that will do this over a local network, right? Where, you know, if you've got a folder on one machine and a folder on another, it will automatically keep them in sync without having to pester you. You run Picnic on both sides and off you go. But again, that's not what he's looking for. He wants it to be on just one Mac. So, you know, I'm thinking that, you know, QDEA's Synchronize Pro 10 or like File Synchronizer Pro would be the answer here, but those are not automatic you know, things that sit and watch FS events and make the copy happen immediately. Those you have to, you know, you have to spawn them on your own, either with a schedule or just manually clicking it. So there you go, John, you get first dibs at the Geek Challenge since I swung and missed.
I think this is going to be a strike too. I mean, my only thought
that's great.
My only thought was, why doesn't he want, because when I started reading the question and the trail of the conversation between you and Sean, I was like, why doesn't he want to use iDisk? Well, iDisk costs money.
Right.
But something like Dropbox. So I'm going to guess maybe there may be a security concern, because there always is when you're pushing data out to the cloud, which can, you know, probably should make some people a little bit nervous, because if you can get to the cloud, then anybody can get to the cloud. Here, of course, you have, you know, your own device. So I'm wondering if Sean could give us a little background on the motivation.
Yeah.
Or just because he wants to do this, and it sounds like you should be able to.
Yeah. Well, that's what it comes down to, is despite or regardless of what the reason behind it is, all the technology to do this exists. It's like, you know, God, can we get the source code to Dropbox and just make a little tweak and not send it to the cloud and just go, you know, point at that file over there. Go, you know. Yeah, I don't know. All right. Where are we on time here, John? You know, I think I think we got to wrap this one up. Do you want to do one more, John, since we're going to be away for a while? Should we let this show drag on? I know what Pete's saying. I'm putting the blinders on. I know Pete's
saying more.
Of course he is.
More bricks.
Are we doing one more? I guess we have to now, since we've teased it up. Do we do John or Abdullah? Wow, look at that silence.
I like the Abdullah question.
All right.
But I'm an Apple TV fan.
So. Okay,
let's
all right.
Let's do it.
Let's do we're it. There. Okay. Thanks, Pete. Much appreciated. No, it's
good.
Gotta
go now.
It's good. It's good to have, good to have the listener represented, right?
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. Guys, I'm considering purchasing an Apple TV versus Netflix versus whatever once I am back in the States in a few weeks' time. My family's home entertainment system is prehistoric. And I wonder if you could devote a few minutes to the Apple TV theme. Specifically, what equipment do you need? What are the pros and cons? And what is the future? And he goes on to say that I realize this isn't necessarily the format of the show, but I'd like to hear your take. And I wrote him back and I said, well, I'd love to talk about it, but, you know, John and I don't use the Apple TV. And his question then got a whole lot more pointed. He said, well, that's a great thing. Why? Tell me why you don't want to use the Apple TV. So John, I'll let you start, and we'll bounce this around, and then we'll bring in the band when my family starts appearing in the yard, you know, waving for me to come home. So,
yeah, well, you and I actually did look at an early version.
We did.
I don't know if it was about a year ago or maybe less, but
maybe more actually.
To me, and Pete, I believe you own one, right?
I do, and I have the latest version of Apple software.
Okay. I guess my reply is, the Apple TV does what it does well, but to me, I feel that at least personally, compared to the TiVo, and this is going to be my answer, my TiVo does pretty much anything I want, especially Netflix. If you want Netflix, I don't know if you're, as far as I know, Netflix is not on the Apple TV, and I don't know if we're ever going to see it on the Apple TV, because, you know, but for a device that can consume iTunes content or help you, you know, as a storage place for your, I would see it as a great companion for iTunes, but as far as doing anything beyond that, you know, Netflix you see showing up everywhere. I mean, Blu-ray players have it. This Roku device, I think, which is very inexpensive.
Yep. Let you,
I mean, Netflix is trying to infect, and I say that in a good way, pretty much any media device with the ability to stream their content. It may not be the latest stuff. So I don't know. My reply is it really doesn't do anything that I would like to do. I don't know. Maybe that sounds good, but I'm not a big consumer of iTunes content, I guess is my answer.
Yeah. And I'm in the same boat as you. I think the reason I'm not a big consumer of iTunes content is because I have a TiVo, and I've been a TiVo guy for a whole lot longer than I've been, you know, than I've had access to any kind of content like that from Apple. Right. I mean, none of this stuff existed back then. The iPod didn't exist when I got my first TiVo, let alone iTunes and you know, all that. I was managing MP3s, but we weren't anywhere near here. So yeah, my path started earlier than Apple had an option for me. And here's the thing, you know, the TiVo, in addition to everything you mentioned, which I do want to touch on, also manages my cable TV. Right. You know, so it's one stop shopping. I've got two tuners. I can pull in HD content, and all of my viewing and listening is accessible from the one box. Right. And that's huge. You know, and take yesterday, for example. Right. You know, my daughter has been sick since Thursday. So she's been home from school for a couple of days. She's starting to be on the mend now, which is great. My son he'd had kind of a head cold thing all week, but it really wasn't that big of a deal. And then yesterday he started with the fever, and it got up just a little over 103, which, you know, started to have us sweating a little, but essentially, but he's fine now. He's doing better anyway. We were home yesterday, all four of us in the house, two sick kids, and nothing to do. And they didn't want to do anything anyway. Right. 'Cause they're sick. So we used Netflix streaming. We must have streamed four movies from Netflix all day yesterday. And you know what it cost me to do that? Nothing. Nothing additional. We, in fact, recently dropped our Netflix subscription, and I think I mentioned this, down to the whatever it is, the $8.99 a month, which is called One Movie at a Time Unlimited. So we can get as many movies as we want in a month, but only have one at a time. But that also allows us to stream either to our TiVo or to our computers, and we can do it all simultaneously. So that's a hugely powerful thing. Now, we've had access on the TiVo to Amazon movies for a while, and now just recently they added Blockbuster movies. But those are a la carte. You pay per movie. And, you know, I can probably count on one hand the number of times that I've paid for a movie on Amazon. We haven't done it with Blockbuster. We're signed up. But, you know, and the reason is, well, you know, if I really want something new, I do have that avenue with Netflix. I've got to wait a couple of days. I don't have it immediately because Netflix doesn't stream the new stuff. But, you know, I can manage my life such that I can wait a couple of days to have a movie, and it doesn't cost me anything extra. And in the meantime, if I want to watch a movie, well, I do have a library of, you know, 12, maybe almost 15,000 movies now that'll stream to me. And TV shows, Lisa and I have watched TV series on Netflix. We started watching Weeds recently. Friday Night Lights is actually one that it surprises us that we actually like. And that stuff is all right there. So, you know, the Apple TV with its a la carte, you buy everything, it doesn't fit. It, you know, for movies and all that, for music, I'm still of the opinion that you buy, and that's my mindset. But for everything else, TV and DVDs, it's like, give me a number, one number for the entire month, and that's what I'm going to get. And so that's my thought on it.
Yeah, and also, I haven't tried it with Snow Leopard. I assume it works, TiVo does have TiVo desktop software, which lets you share
your
music and your photos from your Mac. And if you know the secret handshake, you can also share videos.
I'm pretty sure TiVo desktop software does not work with Snow Leopard.
Oh, because it is coming. It does come up as a 32-bit thing. It does that.
Yeah.
I haven't tried it yet.
Ever. I use Pi TiVo X. which, and I'm thinking, I think I'm thinking of the right utility here. There's two of them that, and they do different things. Yeah. It Pi TiVo X lets you play movies from your Mac to your TiVo. But the cool part about it is that you can stream movies from your Mac in any format. It will convert on the fly and beam them to your TiVo. So, any of your non-DRM'd iTunes movies, definitely no problem. You know, you can mm-hmm. blast them right over there. So, so I have nothing against the Apple TV. It just, it's not anything additive for me. And I guess that's where it ends up, right?
But for someone who is really, who has a lot of their content through iTunes, be it music or movies or whatever, it sounds like a great, great device.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Pete has.
Yeah,
any,
Pete does. Yeah.
I do. I like mine. And let me preface mine by saying that, you know, boy, if Apple TV, if Apple would just make the deal with Netflix, it'd be a home run for me. Because I'm dying to have one of those. I've got a Netflix capable Blu-ray player in my home theater, but up in the living room where we tend to hang out more, it's the Apple TV, and I'm tempted to switch it around, but I like the big screen when I do the movies. So,
right.
But the Apple TV, it's got some benefits. Like you say, the iTunes is the main thing. If you have, if you want to break the Digital Millennium Copyright Act and back up your DVDs to your Apple TV, you can store them there and have a nice library available
right.
without having to hunt for the DVD that the kids played Frisbee with or anything like that. And then the other thing is with the Apple Core hack, you can hang a Drobo on the darn thing and have a terabyte or more of storage. So
right.
you can have basically unlimited movie storage. So that's the ability with it there. And I like it. I just wish they would make the deal with Netflix and or Blockbuster or any of those guys so that it would be a more versatile machine.
And I don't
because
think,
I really like it. I don't think they, I don't will, think either, they will unfortunately
it would, well it would cut into their model.
It does.
You know, I think
which
it
is make money for Apple.
That's right. And
which I gotta say as a stockholder, I'm okay with.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what they need to do is they need to offer a subscription, right? Not only to, and they're talking about this, right?
Yeah,
there's rumors.
To Netflix then even. That'd be fine. If I didn't have to get you know, $3.99 a movie or something
right.
like that, or you know, pay for the movie to buy it, which I have a few movies I bought from them on there and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
and it's nice, but yeah, that would be sweet.
It would be great. Yeah, and I think they'll get there in their own way, you know. And so, all right, that's the that's what we got here. So thank you, Abdullah, for forcing us, or at least encouraging us, to revisit that topic. And thank you, Pete, for forcing us to.
Yeah.
Oh, man, you know what we totally forgot?
Hey, how do I get a hold of you guys to ask you what you forgot?
And that's what I forgot, but now I just remembered. And I'll just get the ball rolling here. First way you can get in touch with us is to call us. And you can call us at 206-666-GEEK, which is, Dave?
4335 on your telephone keypad, or your iPhone keypad, or your cell phone keypad. And then you can email us at feedback@macgeekgab.com. That gets to both John and I, and immediately, I should say, and is the best way to contact us via email. You can
that
send,
was feedback@macgeekgab.com, correct?
It was feedback@macgeekgab.com, and it still is, and it will be for the foreseeable future. And you can send us text there, but you can also send us audio comments. And at least one, if not more, of the audio comments you heard today were sent from people on their iPhones using the Voice Memo app. And we like that. It gives us a great quality comment to play. Really, no fuss, no muss. It's the best. You can Skype us to Mac Geek Gab. And of course, you can leave us comments at iTunes on the iTunes podcast page. I'm going to mix things up here because I like to do that. The podcast marketplace this month includes the A2 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, Yojimbo from Barebones Software, Disc Label from Smile on My Mac, Notebook from Circus Ponies, Pathfinder 5 from Coco Tech, and the new Blue Bridge from Mikus, which I did not mention the price, I don't think, in the slot there. It was $99.99 for the Blue Bridge from Mikus at Mikus.com. And that's all through the Backbeat Media Podcast Network. In December, John, on December 8th, I'm going to be in attendance, in the audience, as a casual observer at the Austin, Texas CapMac meeting at 7 p.m. Central Time. And Bob Levitis is the presenter that week, so, or that that month, that day, that during that slot. So should be a great time, and I'm looking forward to it. If you're going to go, come up and say hi, or come into the audience and say hi. We can sit together. You know, we'll have a bunch of us all right there, clustered. iPhoneAlley.com is Michael Johnston's home. He's the one that converts this show to AAC for you. Cashfly.com, CacheFly.com provides all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. And we appreciate everyone. And we appreciate you. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for staying subscribed. And thanks for sending in all your questions and tips and comments. I think that's it, John. We're off next week. There might be a show if we can schedule an interview that makes sense to run next week. Otherwise, you folks might get the week off. Well, we are hopefully healthy, and the Hamilton clan is on that Disney boat. So that's that. You got anything else to add, John, before we sign off here?
Nope. I got to figure that. Wow, I got the whole day ahead of me. This
I know.
Is great.
We both do. It's great.
Normally, I'd be ready to go to sleep now. But,
that's right. All right. Off we go. Stay healthy, everybody. Wash your hands. Yeah. Lots of echinacea. Wash your hands. Don't get caught.
Made up.